Quando do Chex? Because we are going to have a marathon of the meeting. I think our next break, when we'll have something to eat, it will be a trip. So whoever has to respond to the call of nature, you will go out and come back so that we can get most of the work done today. I know tomorrow is going to be a half day for most of you. You need to also travel. You can't afford to sleep over again and get down tomorrow. So wherever it's possible, we're going to try to deal with this. But let me, I think the SAC, even the SRF and ACC, they've done so well in terms of managing the time, their presentation. Like I said, we are going to call now the South African Union Council of Independent Churches, SAUCI, something like that, S-A-U-C-I-C.
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 SAUCI.
Archbishop Dr. Shole, the podium is yours. You told me everything is right there, upstairs, but call this, can you submit in writing for our business? I think you might have observed earlier discussion, Honorable Mkalibi says, without documentation, our concentration levels are so good. At the end of the presentation, Archbishop, you also need to tell us what we do. Don't just throw it to us. You also need to tell us what needs to happen. Over to you, Abdul.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, beloved brethren. I greet you in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
I wanted to correct what I've said earlier. I don't represent myself. I represent a very big structure, and some of them, they are here. It's just that we got a short note, and then we are not on the list. As I said, it's in my mind. It's those challenges that we are facing in the community. We've been in Parliament several years. May I get the opportunity to introduce the organization that I lead. I am leading South African Union Council of Independent Churches. It's an amalgamated charismatic and Pentecostal churches in South Africa. We are representing 27 church federations with an association partnership with the University of Free State Faculty of Theology, which I am a board member, and the Department of Home Affairs, Marriaging Officer, Civil Servant, which we train priests on marrying out to be marrying officer in the country. SAUCI, it was formed earlier on. We submitted earlier in 2016. We submitted a policy where we had a partnership with TPI, the Pastor Institutes on Self-Regulation of Churches. Through CRF, because they are Chapter 9 institute in the country, we realized that we don't have teeth, and they had teeth. We submitted through them to present it in Parliament for self-regulation. We had a lot of marathons in Parliament. The Parliament sent the proposal from CRL and say, let the church make their own presentation to Parliament for the self-regulation. And then we went out and organized churches, not necessarily SOSIC, other SSCC, IFC, and other organizations together. But I'm not going to say much about that because they are not represented, the organization. Some of them, they are observers today. They will arrange the other time. I will only speak about SOSIC as a president of the organizations. SOSIC, it is being positioned as a peer review mechanism structure. We have been training pastors and as a skills transfer. We're giving them a license. We've been ordaining and concentration since 2016 throughout South Africa. We are having 9 province structures in 9 provinces, even outside South Africa, in Africa. We've been concentrating, we've been training with a partnership training of Med Shepherd Program, disciple mentorship. We train them to win souls and to purchase and to empower their own congregations. It's a certificate program. It's not about academic. It's about skills transfer. We wanted a member and a woman of God, before they have been ordained, they should be a year in the church, and they must have a specific skills. Whether you are a doctor or a monk or a professor, you need to go through the relevant training of the ministries. And in our classes, the last first class in 2019, we had doctors from the universities who went through. In this year, we've got also doctors and master's students, and the bishops and apostles in Five Points Ministry, they are going through the training. The main aim is to assess ministers. It's assessment and nothing else. SOSIC, we give them a license. Now, one thing for sure, we don't have teeth. We are saying to Parliament, if there is an opportunity that you give us extension role for all our members to be able to fund certain functions, so see, we will be able to ask for them to account, as we have been doing now. If members of SOSIC, who are SOSIC, I will not mention the number, we are almost millions members of congregations and the thousands of pastors across the country. I will not mention here the number, but we are a lot members here. To substantiate the reason why I'm saying this, the government has been inviting us in various sectors of members. Numbers have been attending every places. So we have got database of members. We are visible. We are everywhere in the project media, projects. We are everywhere. And our members have been trained. Not necessarily a managing officer, we train them how to conduct church services, how to read the scripture, how to prepare. We have been training them in several things, in counseling. Good people, much to say today, hence I haven't prepared my speech. I will also align with Bishop Mpumulwana. SOSIC is deeper with SSCC in terms of their mainline churches. I am representing Pentecostal Charismatic. But in real life, we are brothers in Christ. In the Five Points Ministries, we are in the same spirit. Whether you are spiritual gifts, the other hand cannot function without the other hand to function. When I leave this world, I will not live with my suit. I will not live with my titles. It's only the spirit that was going to live in this world. Not SOSIC is going to live, not SSCC is going to live, or not divine spiritual ministry is going to live. Only the spirit, my spirit, is going to live. So hence, we are working together. We might differ there and there, but we are working only in the same doctrines, and the challenges that are facing the community of the communalization of religious and abuse of people's beliefs in the system. The government can't do anything. Churches can't do anything. And there are laws, existing laws in South Africa. We know that the SAP, they could not handle Omatoso. They could not handle Prophet Bushiri, what is happening there. You all know, you've seen the televisions. You all know. You all know, you have seen in everywhere other ministers that are raping our children, the younger children. You have seen a lot of things. People have given people petrol, have given them grass as a practice. And most of them, they lack knowledge. They have never been taught. They have never been properly released from their churches. And hence, it is important as a society for the churches to be regulated, because we can have a pure, because we differ in beliefs, in doctrines. We have Muslims, we have Hindus, we have Jewish, we have Christians. We can be in all these committees, and committees can be able to control and discipline all their members if they work on their own. And then they can register within their sectors. They can be on the database. In Gauteng province, I work very close with the Gauteng province, in other province. They've already started putting people on a database, on a faith-based organization database, so that they should know who is the pastor, where do they operate, who are their spiritual father, who are their spiritual mother, where did they get trained, their foundation, how did they grow up. If you have that foundation, it's easy to be able to control all these mushroom churches, all those people who are making profit. People are confused. You find that the people, those are some government says, you will excuse me, I wanted to use this word. There are people who are some government who tends to be able to read the Bible, and they can throw the bones. And they realize that, oh, if I throw the bones and I can read the Bible, I can pull a lot of numbers of people. The next thing he built a church in the yard. He's also a pastor or a bishop, the same Sangoma. And the people will follow him because he misleading the people, because the multi can attract people. And then he comes. And our people, they follow this person. I would say, Madam Person, there's something called the cards. Cards. You all know that. It's a brainwashing of the mind of the people. Our people follow these card churches. And, you know, they can attend my church without putting the tithe. But they will go to the card church and put the tithe because their mindset have already been washed up. You see, one of the churches, they kept their children under 16 years, under 12 years, in their churches for some other reasons. Madam Chairperson, this thing is a deep, deep spirit. I cannot prove to you or to Parliament what is happening. It's only men and women of God who will understand me when I say we need to go deeper to the spirit. When you go to the deeper to the spirit, you see why it's happening in the township. Our children are raping, are killing each other, are assaulting the teachers in the school. If this is on cards, and now government can't do anything, as long as the churches are not regulated, because we can stop it. If my member is a registered Christian peer review, if you pull out, no other peer committee can accept him. If a member from African religion misbehaves and it does not comply according to the code of conduct, there's no way that he can do. You'll be stopped, his church can be suspended, or the church can be linked to other existing church, that they must report to the church, and he must be rehabilitated until the society accepts him, that we are sure that he is sober-minded, he has been rehabilitated, and then he can be welcomed in the community. There are so many things that are happening. Some of the people are my children. I can't mention their names yet, because I'm representing them, but we all know things that are happening on television. Women of God, as you see me wearing this collar and all that, even if I'm an archbishop, I get challenges. I have a sleepless night. They challenge me in the spirit. I fight alone at all. I can't call anybody to come and help me. I can't call the police or any other person. I'm alone at home. I have to face them. The only thing is to call Almighty God to save me. I get it day by day. The only safe way for me is to keep quiet. But I can't afford to be quiet wearing the collar. I must say something. So that's why I'm saying we see them and we tend to ignore the reality of life or that is happening at the moment. We need to self-regulate. We need so that we can come with the programs that we can register at a tertiary institution and aggregate them in terms of spirituality, whether it's Muslim, it's Hindus, it's Christianity, to have the children at schools, because some of them, they are not aware what is happening, because it's a spirit thing. You can call a psychologist, a social worker to come and counsel a child. Yes, you'll be counseled. It is a spiritual. Ask me and other men and women who are making deliverance. They can tell you. Somebody can tell you that, you know, I'm your grandmother from 20 years ago. I've been staying with you. I distract you. You'll never believe that. But it's really, it's a spirit. People go to the graveyard and do the rituals for the old people who are dead spirit to come and distract and do some other things, the businesses and so on. I can see a lot. Some people marry someone just to kill this person to make a ritual. to invite people in the churches, in business. I mean, you can't believe that if you don't go into the spiritual world, you can't know. You say, surely you are taking something, maybe something is wrong with your head. You are getting old. But it's the reality. If the government can do regulate and welcome churches to assist them, as much as Sangomas and all that, they are connected to the ancestral spirit. Yes, that's how they believe, we respect it. Hindus, that's how they believe, we respect it. But we must have to have a common understanding in South Africa, because in constitution, I'm just about to say, there's somebody who's raising their hand, maybe I'm just taking more time. I was waiting there for somebody to raise their hand. Because a book that you have read, you haven't read, you can't talk about it. I'm talking about this something that is happening in society.
I'm the only chair here, eh?
Oh, thank you. Thank you, chair. For the project.
I'm looking at your time. You are on injury time, 2 minutes.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So
thank
the other hands are still going to have discussions.
Yeah. Oh, thank
people
you.
People are charged about what you are saying. There will be a platform for discussions. It's not the discussions. MPs will ask questions on the presentation. Post that, we are going to have discussion. Whoever gets touched by whoever is saying, we'll have that opportunity to express and respond. Can I plead all of you, let's not intimidate speakers on the floor. As long as I've given you the opportunity to talk, allow the other speaker to also have his or her question. Thank you. Proceed.
Madam Speaker, I'm going to stick to 2 minutes so that they can have the question.
Yes.
I'm not going to
contribute as well on discussion.
Yes. I'm not going to say a lot about the documents in front of me, all the harmful religious practices. We all talk about it on documents. I'm talking about the spiritual
What
daily.
Document are you having, if I may ask?
I beg your pardon?
What document are you having before
you? I'm saying the presentation that I have, I just notes that I have here in front of me.
Okay.
Yes. what I'm sharing with you is in my heart.
It's a document at your disposal there.
Yes.
You just got off your prepared notes, selling it from
there. Yes, I just put it aside.
Okay.
I'm a spiritual being. I'm a spiritual being manifested. I'm saying to you, what is in my shoe? None of any other person feel it. The book that I've read, you haven't read. You haven't read.
No. Bishop, that's disruptive. I won't allow you to do that.
Oh, okay.
And you are within the premises of Parliament. Yes, God, in 2 minutes, I've got a clock here. I'm going to stop.
Let me just withdraw, Madam Chair, what I've just said. But all I'm saying is that, as a spiritual being, as we are all spiritual beings here, whatever that you are in contact, the other person might not have the same contact that you are having it. It's not that I'm insulting anybody. You'll excuse me if I might have insulted you. What I'm saying, the spiritual being, when you encounter with God, it's between you and God. So all the harmful things that are happening in the community and so on, I was just saying, raising it with you, your Honorable Chair, saying that if the government, the Parliament, can accommodate churches to have teeth, to be able to deal with this, because we have police, we have a Human Rights Commission, we have a Gender Commission, and we have a National Public Prosecution, with all these laws, things have been done. Nothing happened. We've got all budgets. But they are not doing good for the nation. So from the church sector, religious sector, if we can give an opportunity and empowered with youth, we'll be able to deal with our own pastors. Our own pastors who are embarrassing us. Yes, we are putting our government, our nation into shame. That's all I'm bringing to you, your honorable member. I thank you for the opportunity that you gave to South African Union Council of Independent Churches. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I thank you for your patience, for allowing me to speak. Men and women of God, I thank you.
Off the street.
Thank you. May God bless you.
Thank you. We can have a first bite of the three presentations. For those who have not yet spoken, if you raise your hand, you will also tell us who you are. But let me first start with MP, Member of Parliament, to interact with the three presentations. It's the South African Religious Forum presentation, the South African Council of Churches presentation, and the South African Union Council of Independent Churches. So allow me to first deal with the members. Then I will later deal with whoever. In fact, you are yourself, you are part of the solution. The questions that are going to be raised here by members is this collective that must help to respond to the question. Not only the three presenters, but I will first allow the three groupings that have made the presentation, then also allow your hands for input, proposal, way forward. I'm also mindful that the SRF presentation has recommendations and proposals on what needs to be done. You have dealt with the issues, but so you must use this opportunity to respond to questions raised by MP and also let me see those hands again. Yeah, you will follow the first three MPs on the row. 1, 2, 3. Then the two of you, you'll follow, then you'll be three. 1, 2, 3. Who's there? ICC? No. Yes, Honorable Green, Zuvela, Oberman, and Lutoli. follow the rules, né? Where you are. I'm only seeing only you, Honorable Mamkize. Omanto, you are on the first row. It will be you, you are the first one, followed by Leva and Sander. Then in that order. It's your turn. I don't see your hand. Your hand is open. Your hand is not up. Your hand will be up with other religion, eh? There will be time when you raise your hand. Okay. Honorable Mato.
Thank you, Chairperson. And all the church leaders that are here. I thank you all. Firstly, let me welcome all the presentation made by three religious organizations. We all know that South Africa has a solid existing laws which needs to be practiced and respected by all religious entities. I think the South African Religious Forum, the South African Council of Churches, yes, and other organizations that I didn't mention, has said a mouthful in their response to 10 questions asked. Both their inputs were very much constructive and knowledgeable. It shows ethical codes of commitment and accountability. Codes of conduct should be applied to all churches in South Africa. I think they should belong to an organization that is all known and be guided by Section 10 and 15 of the constitutions. So I don't have any question, you know, because everything that but the question that maybe I just want to make some follow-up was about the issue of the education portfolios that which criteria should be applied in making sure that we have a morning biblical prayer in all the entire schools in South Africa. You know, because sometimes when we were asking why are we no more having the morning biblical prayer in all our schools, then they said because of we are having the different beliefs. But I think the different beliefs, even if we can have the different beliefs of the churches, but the only thing that we pray one God. I think that it should be encouraged in all our schools, maybe to scare the issue of all the learners that are fighting amongst themselves, that are fighting the educators, and also even the killings that are happening in the schools. Then we also maybe, should we also mention, you know, the LGB in the schools, that they should also be empowered on the issue of religion, because what is happening sometimes, you'll find out that the educators are saying this, and while the LGB are saying another language. So therefore, if the pastors, the educators, and the LGB talk one language, I think at the end of the day, we'll reach our goals as this country. On the issue of pastors that are giving our people, you know, this wrong concoction, I think with that issue, I think if all the churches that are in this country were having the code conduct that needs to be followed, and then if they followed constructively and those churches belong to the organization, I think we won't experience any problem. But, you know, we still say thank the CRL because the work that they've done, it is really a constructive work that they've done. Maybe I still have a question because you didn't mention here on your 10 questions about the issue of those churches that are taking place along the road, on the mountain, under the bridge, and next to the river. The people that are wearing white clothes, what are you saying about that? Because I can see that you are on here, but you never mention about that. Because if we really love this country, we need to follow our constitution constructively so. I thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation by the presenters and greet all religious leaders present here. Chairperson, there are a few things that I would want to ask. Not too many of them, but from a point of view of knowledge base and understanding of how the religions are working, because I think that Chairperson, we should first of all understand how they are working, so that we can then have inputs in terms of the issues internally and externally. Internally, in the sense that Chairperson, we would like to ask the SACC in terms of the distinction between the mainline churches and the indigenous churches, and in terms of the privileges that they have, and in terms of the underprivilege that is there, but also to speak to the unity of the religious body itself in South Africa, how genuine it is, and what kind of programs are there to actually see the churches visible. To an extent, Chair, I always see the people of the Jehovah's Witness outside. They are visible, but I'm not their spokesperson here. I am not going to be their spokesperson in the near future. I want to make a point about visibility and the access of knowledge of the things that you're saying you have done to all presenters, of the things that you're saying you have done, and how do you foresee the future in 5 years? In terms of moral degeneration in society, because principals in school come to politicians and complain about what is happening there. But to no extent do they extend the hand or seem to be consulting the religious leaders. So, I want to understand. And hear me well, because I do not understand. The last time I was in church was a long time ago. So I want to understand how you work. How is it that you are going to even achieve to deal with the social ills in society when there is a there are marginalized churches, the so-called mainline churches, and then the so-called indigenous churches. I know that there are churches that do not even have the land to worship, for instance. They are marginalized to that extent. And what is it that those churches that do have land do to make sure that the other churches are assisted as well? If we are genuine to the cause of God, so how is it that other churches can worship in the bushes and others can worship in opulent places? In the face of you sitting there and watching, how are we going to even get to a point of eradicating this moral fiber in society if we are not speaking to the unity necessary for one voice in the religious body that will speak against the abuse of women. The children that have to learn sex at standard one. So how is it that we are going to address those issues? Because those issues are not found in cosmopolitan places, or they are not found there. They will be found where black people are, in the same way that you'll find the dumping sites in townships. So how is it that we are going to seek to remedy genuinely that situation of societal ill? Because, Chair, we are speaking to this societal ill because we cannot speak about the emancipation of our people economically if we are not going to speak to the manner in which they are socialized. We can't speak of the liberation of them in terms of the land and all those things if we are not going to speak to the things needed to extricate the kind of, and the CIC once said, you know, in taverns, most probably in taverns that are next to churches, fundis, that have no other option to worship, they end up next to a tavern, they you know, to worship while the tavern here is busy. So he said, on the other side, then you will find a person that knows you. He knows exactly where you stay. He knows your parents. He knows your siblings. But the minute that you step on that person in the tavern, he draws out an okapi to kill you. So from that perspective, I think that the church should come in there. Because the society is ill at that point. Because what is it that when you know where I stay, where you know exactly what I do, where I work, when I come back from work, most probably I buy you drinks. The minute I step on you, or I step on you, or I pass you and whatever happens, I draw a knife and kill you. So from that point of view, you can see that society has not reached the desirable level of self-tolerance. We are sitting with self-hate in South Africa. So churches must look at this issue. And like my honorable member and colleague has said, these issues, Chairperson, they speak to these two sections in the Bill of Rights, the human dignity and the rights of religion and beliefs and opinions. So I would want to know that the sanctioning of individuals by churches, I would like to know in terms of what body then will be established to actually sanction those individuals, but not selectively, but in gastage, if you like. What body is there established to deal with them? Because part of the reason why I'm saying this, it's because the things that are happening here, Chair, are happening because of the state of vulnerability of our people. If our people were not vulnerable, black people in particular, I'm not apologetic about that because often these things happen then in that space. So if our people were well and busy with production, they were busy with businesses, small businesses, they were busy with schooling, with education, they were busy, there was no reason for the things that I mentioned to exist. So those churches take advantage of the situation of our people, because I do not think that in that space there would have been any survivor if our people were brought to that level of emancipation. I think that's about my submissions, Chair. Thank you very much.
So, Honorable Seder,
thank you, Chair. I first wish to say thank you to all, to the three organizations that have made a submission. And it is really an honor to have, I think, the church here in Parliament today. It is very significant because the church plays a significant role in transforming our society. I have questions that I'm asking all three, but I would specifically address it for the sake of time to the SACC. I want to ask what impact did the perceived or real legislation or have on how you operate as an organization? I said to SACC, but I'm actually going to say to all three, the question is, what pronouncements or legislation has had impact on you, how you operate as a church? And secondly, what can government do to strengthen the church as a social transformation vehicle? The chair has made several inputs around the church in the past and certainly today still having impact in terms of how our society transforms. And then thirdly, I just want to ask if the SACC would define what they see as church. What is the definition of the Christian church? And my colleague has referred to that when they referred to what about those that are under the bridges, what about those that are... So for the sake of clarity, because not everybody comes from a Christian background, but we certainly in South Africa need to define what church is, what is the Christian church, so that when there's engagement that we know who we are engaging. So if you could answer and just say, who is the church, who is the Christian church? How is she defined? And then I also just want to ask, how do we define a minister? Do we define a minister on the basis of the academic background that they have or qualifications? Or is it, what is a minister? And not in the context of your organization, but in the context of the Christian church. When Jesus calls a man, a woman, what does that man or woman, because certainly there is a foundation biblically in defining a minister or a pastor. I want to thank, I missed the organization, I want to thank that you went off script. I think because what it provided is to bring the spiritual element into the room. We cannot discuss the context of the church without understanding the environment that the church operates in. And government and church is part of different spheres within a society. But the church deals with the spiritual elements of human life. The church certainly deals with your birth and it deals with your death. And government deals with how you live. And it is very important that we need to define that within this room in order for this colloquium to really be effective in what we do. And church is not defined. I'm providing an answer from my experience. I'm still saying that you need to answer so that all of our people in this room can understand it. But because church is really defined by who we believe in, and is defined by how we live our life and our association. So I wanted to say thank you for that. Thank you very much for going off script. I also want to ask that there be a definition of the occult, because we cannot make church part of the occult. We need to define what is the occult and what is the impact of the occult on on our society and what is church. And I must speak to the religious leaders to provide clarity where that is concerned, to not use this platform just for your organization, but as a leader for the broader church, because that is who you are. The broader church is under one head, Jesus Christ. The broader church is following the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. And it is within that context that I'm please asking everybody that's here that represents the church to engage government within that context. And therefore, I am emphasizing this, Chair, we need to say what is the occult and what is the church. And if our bishops can please respond to that. There is no darkness in the church. Then it is not the church. That is all. That's my submission. Thank you.
Are we discriminatory? Clap for others, What's going on here? It's a great input, Honorable Member. Honorable Tulin?
Mina, Uguchi, Zoglu, Kulmat, Sulba.
Then you press there on the language, the 11 languages there, on the one on the bottom, left,
I don't have I don't have a clear mandate about that, whether it can be happened, but because that can help them by, let's say, if they can do this, they can able to do themselves, and then the government must, but all of them must be together, not only one organization or only church or whatever it is, calling them all, and then I haven't got a well idea how they are going to be composed of, but if all the stakeholders will make a clear policy saying that can stop. But whereas I'm a little bit worried, a little bit about the way things were happening before, they were not speaking out about those things which were happening here in South Africa, and then how they are going to register those outsiders, because normally the people who are creating problems here, it's not from South Africa. Most of them, they are the outsiders coming from Nigeria, coming from somewhere else. I'm sorry to say that, but normally all those pastors who are doing things are not from South Africa. I thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I want to perhaps greet all of the people Abakhoyo today, and I'd like to use to greet in the name of the Creator, because I think we need to be accommodative as this forum. One of the problems that I'm picking up is that South Africa is generally a country riddled with inequalities. We've got inequalities when it comes to the economy, in terms of the land, in terms of many issues. And when we come to the religious space as well, there are also inequalities. If you were to look at the agenda, I would count close to 6 or 7 organizations who are under the Christian faith, whereas we should be discussing the religious faith in its entirety, because there are other faiths like your Hindu faith, there's going to be the Muslim faith, there's going to be African spirituality. There are also other faiths that are...
I think you missed it when you were outside. I addressed that.
Oh, thank you.
To say we're going to sit here, session with all those various...
Thank you.
Okay?
Yeah, I'm going there.
You missed that.
I'm going there.
Okay.
So
today is the focus on the Christians.
Okay. Now, once we understand that all of these... The faiths need to be well represented and accommodated. There will be a proper platform for the working together of all of the faiths in our country to address all of the social issues that we are facing. Now, my first question goes to the SARF, where one leader spoke about to compel leaders to have a qualification, or to compel ministers to have a qualification. My question there is, what kind of a qualification would that be? Is it a normal educational qualification, or it is a theological qualification? If it's a theological qualification, is it in line with a certain doctrine, or is it in line with a certain curriculum that is provided? Because we find that even the churches themselves do not subscribe to the same doctrine as well as curriculum. Would it not maybe perhaps create a situation whereby churches would not be properly represented if their members are forced to learn or to be qualified in a doctrine in which they are not believing in? The second question, again to the same organization, where you spoke about the awarding of qualifications. to people. I think it's an American institute that where I think you pay close to 2,000 rand. Has the church or the organization actually engaged the Department of Education? Because all of the qualifications awarded in the country, I think they need to be passed or approved by the Department of Education. Then the last question goes to the ACCC. The posture that we have regarding the ACCC is that it is the mouthpiece of the churches with government. And if you were to look at the ACCC, not all of the churches are represented there. And there's a huge amount of churches which are Christian in nature, which are not represented there. Now, does that not create an imbalance whereby government is able to say, we consulted the church on particular issues, whereas they spoke to ACCC, which does not include everyone? Is that maybe not also, because also again, if you look at the chaplains, I think majority of the chaplains are via the ACCC, and the assistance of government to the churches, I think all of these organizations, I think it is ACCC that is getting the most support from government. Does that not make a situation whereby the other churches, the or organizations, feel as if we've got ACCC that is the captain of the industry, whereas we as the other organizations are not really taken seriously by government? Because I think for me, this bias, I'm not pinning the blame on ACCC, but I think it is something that we are observing, is that there's a bias here between the government. I'm not sure whether it is because of the relationship between the ruling party and the ACCC, but there's a bias that may be problematic in terms of being objective when you are dealing with the churches. Because again, if you want to address the issue of moral regeneration, you have to be fair, you need to be balanced, you need to understand there are going to be churches which will not necessarily be in support of the ruling party. Now, you cannot make that now the ruling party or the government will have a negative attitude towards those churches. Now, we need now the ACCC as a body that is going to address, or a body that ought to be objective on the issue of the spiritual affairs in the country, not to be entwined in the political aspirations of other organizations, because it will make the organization not to be able to speak the mind of God, but it will speak according to the political aspirations of their individuals. So those were the few questions from my side. Thank you.
I didn't hear you clapping hands for Ndabevita because of the question. Did I? Honorable Oberman.
Thank you,
Chairperson. Thank you.
I want to greet the men and women of God in the name of God. Chairperson, I want to start off by saying that as a committee, we should have done our name justice, for this is a joint affair, and this should have been an issue for cooperative governance. SEPs should have been here to determine where the gaps and the vacuums exist within existing criminal and civil law. We should have had SARS here, Social Development, Human Rights Commission, Home Affairs, for this is indeed a joint affair. I want to say that we should keep in mind that there has already been a constitutional court ruling in the Prince case that clarified that even if a belief is bizarre, irrational, or illogical, it is nevertheless protected by Section 15 under the freedom of religion. The rule should always be, a crime is a crime, whether you are a pastor, a politician, a postman, or a policeman. So when a crime is committed, or a harmful or criminal act like the Seven Angels Cult is committed, then the state has a duty to act, and it would be in remiss if he does not. The state has a legal obligation as the protector of its citizens and are legally liable to intervene in instances where people are exploited and exposed to dangerous and harmful practices. Yet, we do have sufficient existing criminal and civil law from SARS to SAPS to effectively deal with corruption, exploitation, and cookery. I believe that new laws will only put an additional burden on the already strained capacity of the state, and existing laws should be enforced more effectively, and that is where our focus should be. We need to clearly distinguish between criminality and freedom of religion. The problem lies with enforcement of existing laws to prevent and prohibit potentially harmful and dangerous practices. This is a state which assures the freedom of all faiths and religions. The Bill of Rights doesn't grant the right to religious freedom. The Constitution simply recognizes that these fundamental human rights exist and apply to every individual simply by the virtue of living in this country. The state should be mindful of the well-established jurisprudential doctrine of non-entanglement, and therefore not entangle itself in any way in deciding what is or is not an acceptable practice of any faith or acceptable religious practitioners, unless these religious practitioners are operating illegally and unlawfully and an act of unlawfulness has been committed. As a state, we should be mindful of jurisprudence and not pass laws which nobody is going to obey, as I see in this case. It is not the role of the CRL or the state to endorse or support any theological orthodoxy of any faith. Yes, as a committee, I and the rest of the committee, we are concerned about the recent incidents in the faith community that is bringing the name and the reputation of Christianity into disrepute. But with all due respect, it is emphatically not the role of the state to act or enforce support of some form of regulation, in particular theological orthodoxy of faith. Such support by the state would arguably be unconstitutional, as the state would be in breach of Section 9(3) of the Constitution. So, with regards to foreign pastors, we should ensure that they have the relevant residency status and work permits, and we should vigilantly guard against the xenophobia in all its forms. If a pastor is working illegally and committing illegal acts, existing law should be applied to rectify the situation. If a foreign pastor lives and works here legally, then the South African Constitution affords him equal rights and protection as it does any other citizen. With regards to the gullibility at faith and the issue that the poor are being abused and financially exploited because they are vulnerable to their own gullibility, I say, if the state intends to do more than the National Credit Act and the Consumer Protection Act, then the people should also be protected from the state lottery, casinos, and illegal gambling.
Our constitution is based on the separation of church and state, going back to century in constitutional thought, is of aid to religious leaders instead of being an impediment in this debate, especially if the fear is a state that overreaches its powers. Because that separation between the spiritual and the temporal not just protects the state against religious manipulation, it also protects the religious community against political interference. And I'd rather think that this is what is meant in Matthew 21, verse 21, render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. And this underscores the point made by my colleague Honorable Opperman. A lot of the public attention has been taken by pastors who feed their congregants grass, compel them to drink petrol, behave inappropriately towards female congregants. But if we look carefully, each of these acts is potentially liable to criminal prosecution. And so we've got to ask, what further regulations and laws can we write that is not already in aid of the individual against abuse in these circumstances? And I think the answer is that already in this, let's call it temporal sphere, where the state is meant to apply the rule of law, we don't have the capacity to investigate all the crimes, to lead to all of the prosecutions, to secure all of the convictions that need to be done. How on earth are we going to give, to use that metaphor, a body such as the CRL, more powers, more responsibilities to police so-called religious offences? I think we have to have a reality check in that sense. But there are also abuses that aren't in the headlines, and we've got to consider what if we say that the churches and religions should be regulated, codified by statute, what will we do, for instance, when politicians abuse religious pulpits to campaign, when they appropriate the authority of the church in order to push their congregants in certain political directions? Now, to me, this again falls within the category of many things that no state and no law can police. It is a matter for voluntary organizations in an open society under the Constitution. And Chair, the most obvious answer seems to be, but obviously we're eager to hear the answers, that for these institutions to submit to their own codes of conduct. And when they do not, let us use criminal sanctions and let us use the outrage of the community, as was the case when the pastor compelled his congregants to drink petrol or to eat grass or to do other outrageous things. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the representative of the church. Chairperson, firstly, I'll say here, I'll put you three in one. Which means I'll put the questions in all of these three presenters in one year. Chairperson, I have a problem. Why I have a problem, Chair? If churches will be more politicking than prayer. Church, what I know, when I grow up to the church where we were having our pastor, Babu Mthethwa, who was praying even if the child is sick, can be okay. But today, Chair, They are not church, they are political. I'm telling you. Why I'm saying this is because we cannot divert the issue of these other pastors who are doing wrongdoing in the South African and divert the issue to the Sangomas. When the Sangomas are not here to defend themselves. You see, I mean, I'm a politician. I've been taught that if a person is not there, don't talk about those persons, that person, because he cannot defend himself. Talk about the person that is there so that he can defend himself. And what I can say, Chair, because there are many issues that I have about pastors, but I'll just be. Mm-hmm. Pastors, we have a problem in South Africa. Bishops and pastors, we have a problem in South Africa. Of our children, they don't have their right to get what they're supposed to get in South Africa, according to the Constitution. When the children are going in the higher learning institutions, they are being arrested. Where are you, pastor? Where are you to come and defend those children? Because is their right to get the education? The education is part of the right. It's part of the Bill of Rights to the children. Where are the pastors? Where are these organizations that are here today? I have a problem, Jefferson, if the basic education can teach the seven-year-old how to have sex, the pastors just keep quiet. Where are those pastors? Why did you go all out and say, no, not in our country, we cannot allow this? Defend me, Chair, please. Can I be defended to this person? You see what I know. To have sex is not a sex to be published. That must be at a school from grade one. Teach. But where is this pastor? Where is this bishop?
Mom, they are saying yes.
Okay.
They are agreeing with you.
Oh, all right. No, it's fine. See, that is why I'm saying I have a problem. Pastors, you must know what is your role. Your role is to pray. Your role is to make sure that the country is governed the right way. Not to claim that people will have organization this, organization that, but it doesn't assist the country. Your organization must assist us as members of parliament. We must know that we still have those people who have a spiritual from God. You see, sometimes, umuntu ame lapha emgqoqweni akhipha amaphepha ukuthi isokoli ngapha. The church is that side. Go, you must see the miracles. The God can give you miracles. With smaller than a paper like this. Give you. No! We must not blame anyone here. Divert the issue that you are facing in South Africa. And also, why? How can myself, I can allow a person come to at home and lambast my father and just keep quiet under his fight? Why? I'm asking this person because all these pastors that are doing wrongdoing, they are saying they are the men of God. But all of you here, you are men of God. But you are just keep quiet. Which means all of you are same like them. Why are you keep quiet? Why are you keep quiet? Mina ngiyabe ukhuphe igama lika baba bami emhlabathini ngithule nje. Uthi wena wenza yonke le mkhuba yenzayo through my father's name. No, I cannot. I'll fight with you. So why you do not fight with these pastors that are came and said they are the men of God but they are raping our children? But they are the men of God. Are you wanting our children to trust God? Or are you want our children to say, "Hey, God is just nothing to play"? You don't think that you are making the God's name to be lambasted and to be like nothing? You can say whatever you want as long as you can say, "I'm a man of God." People will listen to you. Of which this God is not a real God. It's just a God to play about his name or her name. I don't know. Me now be happy the day I saw all these congregants, all these organization churches go to the street and say, "Not in our name of God. Not in our name of God. If you are a real pastor, come to us, tell us. What is the spirit saying to you about God? Why are you doing this kind? You are the man of God." And I would be happy the day I saw churches on the street say, "Hey, Nafsan, you do have money. Don't eat man. This man is blowing these children. Children, they cannot go to jail. We send our children to the university to learn. Because the education is part of their bill of rights. Why now you allow amaphoyisa athatha abantwana basemajele bophatha? Nikuphi? Hamba nothela kweminyango yeyunivesithi nithandaze ngempela sibone. Niguqe nishone nikhuphuke. Yebo, sibone ukuthi sinabophasta abameli izwe lethu. Asifuna abophasta bama-organization. Sifuna abophasta bakumela izwe lethu. Bathandaze. Basho ukuthi no. Woza baba mini. Awusilandela abantwana bethu babangayi majele. Sabe sithaba zofunda. Abantwana bafuna ama-right wabo. Mabanikeze ama-right wabo. No, abayanga abantwana kuyolwa laphana. But it seems like abantwana baya empini. Abayanga esikolweni. Sifuna bathandaze. Ngoba thina singamapolitician asikwazi ukuthandaza siyalo. Ninayizani nomthandazo. Siwubone nathi simjoyine. Sibe semva kwenu sijabule. Sithi na, sinabafundisi abamelizwe. Cannot even a chair agree ukuthi you see sometimes somebody, when I was the name of Jesus, it was a big name to me. I thought that name of Jesus is a big name to me. And if I can say to a person, you see these pastors that were not educated, they were doing right things. The most educated pastors, they are the most doing wrong things because they are speaking big English. They are the most doing wrong things in the community because of this. They are speaking. Those who were not educated, they were doing wrong things. As I said, I was a church member when I was growing up. I'm not a raised one. No one was betting me because the pastor that was in front of us was not educated, was just talking about God. only. But they are the mob. What are we going to say? I think Mina, I can say, this be a shame, is a calling to be a pastor. It must be a calling, not be an education. It must be a calling for that to understand why are you here. Yeah, it must be a calling to be a pastor, not to be an educated pastor. No, it must be a calling for that to understand. And even your spirit will tell you why are you here. But if you are here to read this old constitution, yeah, you can do whatever because you are just reading. You don't know what is the calling of this. You just don't think. Mina, I'm not happy at all if I cannot see all of you in the street. Talk about these three things. These foreigners who come here and invade our land and do what they wish about our people. This education of sex from 7 years. This arrested of students from universities when they are fighting for their right to be educated. Why did the NSFAS, they have money to pay for them, but they don't want to pay for them because no one can tell them that they pay for this. If you can stand up, they'll pay because they know you are the man of God, you fight for the truth.
Bishop, I'm forgetting the neighbor here. I nearly skipped him. Okay.
Thank you very much,
Jefferson. Can you
hear him? Thanks, Jefferson. Let's welcome the presentation by our bishops. My little understanding is that religion is the endowment of individuality and the bearer of love. The critical question now is, we must ask ourselves, if indeed you concur with me, my understanding, that religion is an outlet of individual dignity and a bearer of love. What has happened now to that corruption of religion that today we've seen the emergence and the purification of churches abusing the faith of the people? What has happened? This now tells me to ask this question for better understanding. Not from what you have presented. Maybe it might be from there. If then religion is the bearer of love, is there a possibility that religion may be faith neutral or doctrinal neutral? If so, to what extent would be in a position to fight anything empty? The social ills that are emerging and corroding the social fiber in society. And those who argue that religion indeed is independent, to what extent is the state and religion
complementing each other. Is religion existing in space, or is it existing within a state, or is it a state that is existing within religion? Those are questions that we must answer. So that as we begin to say, no, you government, you have no role to regulate our behavior. And indeed, the state would never regulate religion as a doctrine. The state would regulate my behavior. And preemptively so, if then there had been existing self-regulation in the form of code of conduct within our interfaith organization, we would be able to conduct some peer review. And some of these abuses that had run so long in this country, let's take the example of the cult in the Eastern Cape. Those boys, they took people away and quarantined there on the mountain for too long, for a number of years. Then, what measure do we have in place that will immediately assist us as religion and the state to intervene early and preemptively some of these abuses and behaviors that are harmful to society and the people particularly? When will we be preemptive? Yes, we must not regulate the faith. Yeah, good. Then should we allow you to behave as it is and put the name of God in disrepute? Should the state hold up and say, okay, continue. Are we not contributing to permeating society and actually contributing and allowing a space for these social ills to manifest themselves and to overwhelm even yourselves? What is it that the state must coexist with religion? And none of these which exist alone. No, it can't. So we must accept the fact. And then if then therefore our religion is doctrinal neutral and faith neutral, we would not call for the state to say yes or contrast. The Constitution in the Bill of Rights, all of us, we have economic, political, and civil and other rights. What happened then? Because in the Constitution, there are also, while there are these rights, there are general limitations. Because no right would be like that. If we then the right is in that situation, they will manifest in this ill that was one. Because of a right beyond a right to do whatever that is outside the normal norms in society and get into that problem. So to what extent then is religion faith neutral and doctrinal neutral? And again, because what is important is decency and tolerance, those values. What has happened that we are finding that there is no religious tolerance among them between ourselves? There's denomination. Should we not go back and recapture that so that our faith, we are in a position indeed to intervene? I said, the dignity of the people in South Africa have been greatly violated by claimed churches. Spraying people with boom, a chemical, and then we say they are going to get salvation. And working on their ignorance, because that's what they do. Those pastors, they actually abuse people playing on their ignorance, because they are poor. They are looking for salvation in their dire situation, and therefore they are being abused, sprayed with blood. And
actually, this
Thank you, Honorable Chair. May I begin by addressing the last speaker, because it is much more directed to the order of the day. We said this in our report, but I want to say it again. When Pastor Mguni was doing what he was doing in social movement with Pastor Daniels, the SACC raised the issue. I spent personally several hours in social movement engaging with the matter. And our view was that Pastor Mguni was a 23-year-old, a young person. And he may feel he has a vocation, but he doesn't have people that he works with in his organization to help direct him. And we were therefore seeking to assist, working with Apostle Muloi from Clarkston, and this is to say that we're not blind to these issues. We convened the Bitu when we gave up and shared the experience. And there were people in the group that were saying, our churches use water and other elements for our rituals. What these people are doing makes us look bad. And it was a collective decision that this has nothing to do with religion, but we have no power over it. And this is where when you say that we can self-regulate amongst ourselves. We can regulate within the SACC, but we can't regulate Pastor Mguni. There can be no statutory structure to do that apart from law enforcement. And therefore, a crime is a crime, whether a person is a Christian, priest, bishop, or anything else. And that's why we are saying we shouldn't be spending more energies on creating another regulatory structure, but we should enforce the law as it stands. And that's why we then refer the matter to the Human Rights Commission to say they must investigate the prospect of human rights violations. Mzwake Mbuli nearly wrote a song about this because he was part of that campaign to try and deal with Mbuli. But, so that's the point I want to make is, it's not as though anybody thinks that religion is above the state, but the state belongs to all of its citizens. And government is the manager of the state for the people, as elected. And that management, we believe, has to act according to the laws that are legislated by the representatives of the people. And so, if there's a problem with the functioning of the laws, then we ask the oversight body, the parliament, to see to it that it is tightened, whether it is through budget or through tightening the appointment systems of the people that are in place. But that's exactly why we elect you, to do that. But I want to deal with a couple of the other matters that were raised that needed the attention of the South African Council of Churches. First one is that the South African Council of Churches is not a body that represents all religions and all churches. We've never claimed that. Nor does it have any money from government, actually. We don't have any privileges from government. It is important that we maintain our independence from political parties. Often people say the SACC is part of the ANC. That's not true. There's a very interesting analogy, or rather anecdote, story I will tell. In 1985, when the Credo 4 funeral was taking place in Credo,
That funeral was conducted by Bishop Bruce Evans of the Anglican Church in Port Elizabeth. For the first time that day, the Communist Party was unfurled in public in South Africa at that funeral. A number of pastors were unhappy that there was a Communist Party flag about them. And I would say one of them was Alan Busak. But you know, Bruce Evans said, look, we're here to conduct a funeral, let's do the funeral. And that happened. Sunday time the following week, raised the question with the then Archbishop of Cape Town, Philip Russell, bless his soul, he has since died, and said, how do you deal with the fact that one of your bishops was marching under a communist flag? That's the Sunday Times question. Archbishop Russell says, and this is instructive, he says, we've chosen to walk the path of social justice. If anybody else, whether the Communist Party or the Conservative Party, chooses to walk the same, we're not going to abandon it just because somebody else is on the same road. We campaigned against apartheid in this country at a great cost. We did the Standing for the Truth campaign and people got attacked at a great cost. We didn't do that for the ANC. We did that for all South Africans. We worked with the World Council of Churches to create the program to combat racism, which supported all the liberation movements with humanitarian aid. When the change came and the exiles were coming home, I personally was pastor in Utenick at the time. We created a system where every family that has an exile should register. Does not matter what party they are in. And they should tell us when last they got to hear who these people were, what organization they're in, what name they were functioning by. Because some families don't know that their people are no longer alive. Others don't know that they no longer have limbs. So there's going to have to be a pastoral ministry that deals with this transition of people coming home with expectations that cannot be met. Others left children here and they come back with different wives. These are pastoral issues. This has nothing to do with any political party. It was totally, totally, totally non-partisan. We've always been. Any party that stands for social justice will have our support. But that's what we stand for. We cannot afford to be partisan because for our business is stability and social justice. All the parties are in our churches. They are all in our churches. And I make the example of when I talk to churches to say, please make sure you ensure you're clear. Of course they can't control all their ministers, but please make sure your ministers don't take political positions because that undermines the public ministry of the churches. Imagine if political party X, which I support, then gets into a violent situation and kills this person who is a political party B, but this person is actually and their family are members of my parish. And the family says, we're not going to have him run a bury here because those are his people who killed. How embarrassing does that get to be to the church? And that is why, and I think whether you believe it or not, I tell you from me, the South African Council of Churches has no political party. Because all the churches have got all the members of political parties in our country. And we stand for social justice. I'm going to pass on from that and say, therefore, the perception that either the SACC is a governing body of churches or whatever is totally untrue. It just happens to be the one organization that is there longest, perhaps, through the thick and thin of our society. And we've not abandoned them. We're not going to walk away just because there are other organizations. They are welcome. They must do what they do. We're not going to stand in the way. We support all organizations doing what they need to do. We don't take money from government. If we did, we would not be able to have our independence, actually. I know there are lots of people in our churches that say we should take money from social development. I personally, as general secretary, I say no. Rather be broke. We've had the SACC retrench all its staff in 2013 because there was no money. My office is only with three people today. There is no normal. But it doesn't stop us from our vocation, because we're called to do what we're doing. About the matters of independent churches, maybe again another story in history would help. It is the South African Council of Churches of the Christian Institute that began the very first organization of African independent churches in South Africa. And it was called the African Independent Churches Association. Was established a school. There are still bishops today that were trained in the school that was established by ACCC and Christian Institute at Belfast. So we've never had an issue. That's why in the membership of the ACCC, there are, besides what you call mainline churches, we don't call them that. But it is true that the ACCC was originally only in South Africa members of the World Council of Churches. And naturally, those would have to be colonial churches. That's what I call them. Because I'm not one of those colonial churches, but I'm quite happy to embrace everyone. Then, in 1960, with the Sharpeville killings, the World Council of Churches organized a conference here in South Africa, but challenged apartheid. It was the World Council of Churches, it was not the ACCC. And since then, the creation of the Christian Institute and the ACCC then of 1968 and the message of the people to South Africa, totally at odds, saying we'll fight apartheid in every way possible. But to do that, amongst other things, it was a choice for what we call the option for the poor. Therefore, you assume an analysis of South Africa that is based on the needs of the weakest in society. That was part of the reason for organizing the African independent churches and giving it space and a voice. We still have that body called the Council of African Independent Churches. You see the membership of that as presented to the chair. We have got charismatic and Pentecostal churches, including the Grace Bible Church and Rhema churches. All of those are part of the African Council of Churches. Because it is no longer a body of the colonial churches. There is no, and we don't require members, churches to become members of the ACCC. In fact, the St. John's Apostolic Church of Madangu, it was broken down into 3, 4, 5 groups. One of them came to the ACCC asking for membership, but we said, no, why didn't you come together with your brothers and sisters in the other splinters and come together? And we worked with them up until last Good Friday. I was at Rustenburg. It was a great celebration for Good Friday because all of them were together. And today, we still say you don't have to be members of the ACCC, but organize yourselves and make sure that you are true to what you believe in. So I want to debunk any view that we are seeking to absorb other bodies or to supplant them or to have privileges and benefits. Land, you're right, sir. It is not an issue that is new. It comes from the days when these colonial churches had access because land, a valuable land, was in the cities, and blacks were not admitted to have properties there. And a lot of indigenous churches don't have that land because they never had space in the cities. And that is why the municipality of Tshwane, a few years ago, opened up the space to say any church, particularly those that are landless, can identify a property and access that. And I think that is a process that is going on across the country. But it is not an issue that is new. It is always in there, and I think we recognize it. I talked to the Shembe communities, again, because we have a good relationship. And Abakwa Shembe said to me, we don't want churches. We want to be, we know that we will not allow churches because we're not recognizing the past. But we actually are much happier under this tree now because we've developed a liturgical culture that requires that. That's what they say to me. Now, nobody's going to be forced to go into a building if they don't want it. But those who do need services, the state must provide with a preferential option for those who have a greater need, in this case, more the poor communities. That's where we stand. Sorry, the fee is not full matter. I do not know, Mam Kize, how you missed this. But actually, it is the churches that enabled the student communities to at least come together. You might know that the First on Fall community did not want any leadership to be recognized because they believed that, you know, if you have leadership, they're going to be co-opted. I myself visited no less than 6 universities and had meetings with leaderships of students into the night. And of course, I won't spend the first 2 hours abusing you so that you give up. And I would say to my church leaders, please, if you take yourself too seriously, don't come with me to these meetings. But you see, it was all to say, how can we best understand your needs and support them? We then convened a SACC's convention at Randburg, which was called by the SACC. And that was in 2015, the first time it happened. We dropped the ball because it didn't follow through. And that's why I had to now go university to university to apologize for the fact that we dropped the ball and see how we can continue to work with that. We have been working with them right up to now, this campaign, because we've been talking to them about this and said, look, we're not going to achieve it by going to the street. That's not how churches function. But we'll achieve it in other ways, in engagement and communication. We've tried our best. It's not perfect, but we've never given up on them. When they eventually agreed to have meetings, they said, okay, find the man in Fundis so that we can meet. I called our travel agent and said, we have not got the money, but these students need to meet. Please contact them and arrange for their travel as well as their accommodation for hotel meeting. First meeting was here in Cape Town. And the travel agent said, it's going to cost you so much. I said, just give us the bill when you're done. And I'll go to him and I'll go to her and say, please put in 10,000. Don't give it to us. Send it to the travel agent. Pay them. This is what it costs. And that's how these meetings were organized. So we did care. We continue to care.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think when it comes to the issue of the participation of the church in education, I'll just cite one example in Gauteng. I think we as leaders need to acknowledge that church programs, when it comes to dealing with social ills and social problems, are not articulated the same. But there are programs that are geared, that happens through our member churches in terms of their social intervention program. Just to cite a case in point, some of our member churches are involved in Gauteng. In Gauteng, there's a well-established program that started when Barbara Creasy was the MEC of education. It's called Faith for Quality Education. And I mean, it's in its formation, we were there to develop the framework of how we can participate in assisting the school as, not number one, not as a place of religion, but as a place of education, to indicate how we can provide our supportive role to deal with issues of satanism, issues of drugs, issues of bullying, and so forth. So it's well documented there. Members of the public can access it. Just to cite a case in point. Now, when it comes to the church, what is the church? There is no generic standard definition that we can give and say, like Wikipedia, this is the church. We look at church as those who purport to be followers of Christ, have reference to scripture, have their own tradition, have their own theologies, have their own history, and their own way of doing ministry. That is how briefly I can summarize a complex entity and field as a church. Now, in the church, we have diversity, and this diversity is embraced in that way. So there's no way you can be prescriptive in terms of saying, this is church and this is not church. Now, I think when it comes to the expectations that are there about what the church can do to deal with social issues and how the church can become a vehicle of social intervention, I think we have to put it up front there and say, I think the problems are there, the problems are immense. There's micro and macro issues. Even the resources that the churches have to deal on a large scale with those social problems that are there is almost impossible to expect the church to do that. But the church can become a critical partner with all the stakeholders in society. I would want to suggest that I think as a nation we need a social compact where we are not going to put responsibility on one institution, one structure, and say you deal with the problem because you have the panacea to solve all the problems. We must not say to the church, you have all the spiritual powers and you monopolize God, and God will give you all the powers and you will work like magic to deal with all social problems. These social problems are deep, they are historical, they are complex, they are massive, and they need all of us. All of us not to put a blame on this one or not, but all of us to say, this is the South Africa we love, this is the South Africa that people have died for. We have a different vision of South Africa. We want a South Africa where there is prosperity for all, there's peace for all, there's equality for all, there's access to all the resources, there's coexistence amongst all of us in terms of our religion, our culture, and our creed, without attacking and undermining one another. But I think it's going to take all of us to make a commitment of saying, how do we work together using things that are our strengths from our own constituencies and making sure that we put our best foot forward to ensure that we deal with the giants that are trying to destroy our land. Mm. And all of us, we can do it if we think we can work together, than finger pointing and blaming other people. We can have a lot of laws, but even in the midst of the best laws that are given there, we still have misdemeanors happening. Mm. We need to go beyond the laws and say, how do we create new values about the us protecting the individual rights, the human dignity, and all the other things. There's reference to Ubuntu, all these things that we know are part and parcel of our DNA as a people, and say, how do we come with a new dispensation and try to bring renewal into our own communities? Now, when it comes to the issue of when it comes to the issue of ministers and their credentials, how does a person become a minister? I think this is a minefield. It is a minefield because we are dealing with spirituality. I think the issue is not credentials. The issue is, what is the problem and how do we deal with the problem? The problem is people violating the rights of others and treating others inhumanely. That is the problem. That is the elephant in the room. That's what we must deal with. Because people who commit these things, we know who they are. They are just a small minority within the religious body. And we must tackle them, all of us jointly, because they are bringing our country, our religion, our social order into disrepute. It's like we are a lawless society where people can just do their rogue things untouched. And that has nothing to do with credentials. Because the issue is, whatever is criminal must be stamped out of the community. We don't have to wait for somebody to show us their credentials. We have to deal with the problems that are there. I want to end here.
Okay, thank you so much, Bishop Matole and Bishop Umban. Over to you, Archbishop.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. What is happening in our society is a challenging. We don't need a government to partnership with government. We should not be associative to government. I always said to the president and the minister, they are our children. Before they become member of parliament, they were community activists. They were our children in our own home. When they leave parliament, they go back to the townships, to their communities. Mm. Now, we tend to separate government and the church. our role, it should be a leading figure. We should be a leading figure in the society, in civil society, in government, in all aspects. You see them every time when they are fighting in the parliament, that they need church. It's a fact. Yes, they're flatlining the church. So, earlier on I mentioned, Honorable, that somehow we need a spiritual being. Because the churches have been supplying. And if you supply, God will leave you. So you'll operate out of your flesh. You'll punch each other, you'll throw the stones and the chairs and all that. Those are things you should consider. Bring the way that we're here, but it should be in order. First of all members are from the community. You need to be registered with the city, with your municipality, and into the database. Coordinate with the MMMC of the municipality. Secondly, the legislator, provincial legislator. You need, there is a coordinator of the MEC of the province who deal with the faith base. Need to be in the legislator so that they should identify, you should be part of the all the programs that are going on in the province. Then we have the national interface at the presidential office. There is an interface link there. There is no preference. I hear a lot of people are saying SSCC, they join the preference than others. Perhaps maybe we need to sit down on we should come together in one room as Christians. We don't have to have a stake there and there. We are confusing the government. Even if they want to help us, how will they help thousand church federations? Because everyone wants recognition, everyone wanted to say something. And we are still using the same God, the same kingdom, same Bible. The same challenges are facing us. We can handle them under one roof. What I'm saying is this, let's organize. Be organized. It doesn't matter where you are there. Society of organized. We've got leaders in Western Cape, we've got leaders there, we recognize. But we must have a protocol under one roof. Is there leadership from this house, COPTA, they want to speak to Christian community. We then know whom to speak. We will refer them, we know. It doesn't put you down whether you're a doctor or a bishop or not. It doesn't matter. That's a protocol. In our Episcopal, we have that protocol. Now, for instance, for SOSIC, we are still young baby, but we have graduated. We have launched in 27th of August 2015. We made our presentation for credentials to the presidency office. Then they said, it's still early. Go and launch your organization. We want to see you be launched. Then you can send a proposal of a protocol. We launched the organization. We went to the province and we then have a proper and send it to them. What I'm saying to you, I'm opening your eyes. Stop complaining. Go and organize your house in order. And then submit your credentials, who you are. Oh, everything should be in order, your credentials and all that. To the right presidential, to the province. First, it should be in the municipality and the provincial structure. And then you can send it to the national and the presidents. There are some, Dr. Bongani is dealing with the interface. And then from there, they will invite you in all social cohesion, all social, national building, cultural diversity issues. They will invite you, your organization, together with others. We need each other. Irrespective of culture, race, and religion. Don't wait to be recognized. Work in your communities. Professor can tell you, Musoma, we were working with them early years while you were still a deputy chairperson, with all challenges of the school, traditional initiation schools in Eastern Cape, in everywhere, with the, my children. Some of them, I brought them to them, Bishop Archbishop Zondo, they were wanted to take to court. I said, no, no, you can't take this. I will handle it. We got lawyers. We handled big expedition. We went to, here, I'm thinking, he's here. He's here. We handled it. We cooled him down. It's not about, I've got so many millions, I've got so many thousands of people who can't say anything. No, no, no. There is order in the church of God. And there is some principles and there is laws in the country that must be followed. We handle that. There is another pastor, Mukuba, from Soweto. In one day, you've got 40,000 congregation in one Friday night vision. You bought a land in an industrial area where you worship, and it was not rezoned as a worshiping center. People around the industrial community were complaining because the noise from the tent, the video, the other women opposite complained to the municipality that now when I wash, I've got no privacy, the camera is facing to my house. And the pastor, I refused to change that because of money. It took 2 years with 8 advocates going to court, the High Court, trying to defy the city of Johannesburg. It took only 2 days, I was so sick, to resolve the matter. We called the deputy speaker from parliament, the provincial government, to come and resolve the issue. And the mayor now is the deputy minister. We tell him that please cancel all the legal action. Let's resolve this. The Soweto veterans, they were involved. After they marched in Cape Town to demonstrate, I said to them, look, it doesn't matter how much money you've got, how many people you've got. You must submit under the laws of the country, the bylaws. You must have a code of conduct in the church. Those are the incidents I wanted to elaborate to you, good people. The lastly one, Prophet Bushiri. You all know Prophet Bushiri and one incident. There were people died in Tshwane Recreation Center. Prophet Bushiri didn't comply with the bylaws of the city of Tshwane. And yet he's having something like 12,000, more than 12,000, almost 20,000 people. Because Botswana government have closed the church in Botswana. So they are flocking to South Africa. So, civic organization marched to burn the church, the area, the Tshwane Center. And it does not belong to Bushiri. Bushiri is subcontract to the organization, Agriculture. So the general commander of police in Tshwane asked Bushiri, contact the Sosik president because you are independent. Perhaps they can assist your church because they are going to bear. They have submitted a petition for approval from the police police in Pretoria. I then gave a call and my spokesperson phoned the premier of Gauteng and also the mayor of the former mayor of Tshwane to organize a meeting. And also MEC, the premier sent MEC Nandi Mayatola and the Tshwane fraternals today with the police there. And I then flee to Durban. There was an organization of the African National Congress in Durban and speak to the president of civic society, Sanko. And ask Sanko, president, give me a leader in Tshwane to come and negotiate to stop this march and that is going to destroy the Tshwane Christian Center. So it was resolved. We then asked the mayor to go and inspect. They even inspect and find that he didn't comply. And we said, close, suspend the church. They did suspend the church. And then Prophet Bushiri went through and complied, signed all the documents, and accepted that is wrong. Then we then facilitated to the CRL to go to the CRL with the previous chairperson. So the message is this. The churches must partnership with government. Because I know some of you are saying we don't want to be in the wallet of the government. Sosik doesn't receive any cent from the government.
But we are advocating that our church members must have a partnership with government, because there are some programs like social gender abuse, food security. Those are programs, skills development, that if your church is partnership with any other department, you'll be able to employ some other members in the community to empower them, especially our independent churches, depending from the tithe, from the offering from their members. Now, in El Reno Park, one of my members, Bishop, he was given a program from Houghton government in the skills development. That was 5 years ago, Chairperson. They started with 5 million. Now, it's a lot of millions, because they managed to prove to government that they can do and improve the life of the community. As you all know, El Reno Park, it was a lot of president even went to El Reno Park. It was a lot of drugs in the communities. They managed to improve. There were a lot of programs put on in El Reno Park. So there is a lot of things that the government, the churches can do. Only if you partnership with government to empower your own communities. Yes, it's not necessary that you should vote for a particular political party. Sausage is not a political desk of any other political party. But I'm telling you, good people, I'm everywhere. Sausage is everywhere. When the president put his feet, we are there. When every minister of tourism, any minister, sausage is there. During the inauguration of the president, he extended the invitation to sausage. We sent 180 ministers to the stadium in Pretoria. That was the first time in the history of South Africa, democracy. I am trying to demonstrate that partnership is important. Right? Not ANC, the government. They send, we organize all ministers in all provinces to come to Pretoria. But they spent at their own cost. The government didn't pay them for the fare and transport. They said, we wanted to see the president to hear and then witness the inauguration. So they traveled everywhere. It's because of the partnership. I've been having a partnership with CRL. Not I agree with everything that they say. At some point, I disagree with Professor Musuma and previous chairperson. Because of Archbishop Zondo, who is my son, I'm proud to say that. I'm not afraid of what is happening that you see in the TV, but he is my son. Yeah, they are always in your house, under the bed. Those ones who are silly, that you need to discipline them. And those who are on. So, if you don't have a code of conduct, you'll not be able to call them order. So money and a number, it does not make me somehow. Because I've got some policy that I put in place. Prophet Mokoro, also, we discipline him. And then I'm saying to you, it's because they realize that you've got working relationship with government. We said, we will not stand for you if the police comes in. You should not commit crime because you are a priest. No. So, madam, the church should be a social vessel, as Bishop Matole have said. During our liberation struggle, SOSIC was not there. I was with SSCC. And then we were active. We were all grown up. At some point, we didn't have cars. Reverend Gift Mwerani. You remember the police was, the lady in Pretoria was killed. We called the Metro Police to come and escort. When they get in a hotel, they took us there to Hammersgrad. I said, Reverend, we can't miss this. We have to go and conduct a funeral. So those are the arrangement agreement when you work with government. In all aspects, police, metro, municipalities, you work with them. DA, EFF, ANC, they had
challenge in Gauteng municipality. And I told them that I'm available to come and pray for you. I said so, yes, I'm available. I don't expect to get payments. There's no paying for salvation. I went there to Tshwane. Before they start all this, I went through the... somebody look at me as this man is getting mad. I was walking around the chamber and prayed. Yes, I was praying there. Well, the election went fruitfully. Yes. So all I'm saying, even in Tshwane, I'm extending invitation to you, men and women of God. Go to Tshwane and pray for all the leaders there in Tshwane. There is no mayor. There is no speaker. There is no administrator in Tshwane. And yet your community are suffering. So all the sentiment I'm saying to you, it's a reality of life. You don't have to read in the books. You need to do the same thing SSCC did during Archbishop Desmond Tutu, when they march to Regina Muti, when they have a meeting there. They fought for liberation struggle to liberate the country without any check, without anything. So nowadays, I think our people, we have separated ourselves from God. We have left what we have been called according to Matthew 29, verse 28. The commission that we talk and say we are the priests, we have left our commission. We want them to be seen. We want positions. Some of them, they are career preachers. They want them to be recognized. I've got so many members, I will be in parliament. I will get so much for projects for my church. It's not about that. When you are the men and women of God, you fight for the widows, for the orphanage, for the homeless. You become selfless. You know, all these materials, they are nothing to you. Honorable Chair, I've left my comfortable salary where I have a business in Klerksdorp. I see more than 50 people. I consult for more than 500 rand per person. I left it when I born. I could not do anything when the God spoke to me. I tried to avoid it, but things happened in my life. I went back, returned to the ministry. Honorable, I've been all over in Africa and so on. All my credentials can give me a good job in any government, anywhere, but I can't because of the calling. Now, all I'm saying to you, good people, His Grace, Excellency, Patriarch, you receive a commission. Focus in the ministry. Let's leave politics aside. We are not politicians. We are not elected. You are the leader lifetime. Honorable Chairperson is a politician. Few years you won't be in the chair. It's hot. So you should be there for them, irrespective of the affiliation of political party, irrespective of what. I know in my house I've got people who favor soccer teams, Pirates and Chiefs. I accepted that. We've got rules to accept it. At some point, even my wife said, I wanted to surprise you. I didn't vote for the party that you fought for one other reason. I respect that. We must not lose our focus of calling. Honorable Chairperson, it's a lot that I can say about my calling, our calling. Yes. We should actually have a teachings to the government. And teach government to include us in the budget. To see what does the church need.
in the program of government, they must really include opening of parliament, opening of provincial legislature. In every project, when the minister launches something, the open school, the open road, they must invite a local minister to come in. If you don't involve God, you are lost. There is darkness and there is light.
Yes.
We are the light and the soul of the world.
Okay.
So if you walk in the darkness, you are gone. You are really gone. We are giving your life for sacrifices by the darkness, by the kingdom of darkness. I thank you. I thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The disadvantage of being the last to respond.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I understand what you say.
But there are those that will speak to you.
Yeah.
Like the qualifications ones.
Yeah. The South African Religious Forum proposed solutions for the religious sector to Parliamentary Portfolio Committee. And I want to read as follows. Educating and training religious leaders. Mam Mkhize asked a question about calling. The South African Religious Forum believes in a calling. But we also believe the pastors must be trained and also be educated. A doctor cannot be a doctor if he doesn't be educated and be trained. There was a question by our honorable member. Does South African Religious Forum issue certificates? The South African Religious Forum is not qualified to issue any certificates for pastors to practice ministry. We are not that body. Now I want to just explain this house when our bishop from Free State, the chairperson, spoke about pastors paying money for their doctorate. Now when he mentioned this, he tried to explain the house that why we have such a huge problem in ministry, because pastors are buying their certificates. Pastors are performing all of this harmful practices is because they are not educated. And the South African Religious Forum is creating a platform for the religious sector to be qualified and to be educated. And I think we as the South African Religious Forum, we will place our thumb on pastors being educated. And it will also alleviate a lot of these issues that our people are experiencing today. Number two, supporting an establishment of interfaith bodies, interfaith organizations, unity and diversity. Now, in this house we have Pandit Singh that represents the Hindu Sabha from KZN. We have Muslims here, we have traditional leaders here. And this platform, we need to just guard ourselves when we speak about other faiths. Because freedom of religion doesn't allow pastors to come against other faiths. And before I close, I want to give our Honorable Dr. Msomi, because he's our leader and he's leading the traditional leaders. Number three, to work with legal representatives. For example, FOSA, understands chapter 9 institutions and the Commission for Religious and Linguistic Affairs, the CRL Commission that is led by our Prof. Msoma. Number 4, to abide and respect the code of conduct in order to be accountable. Now, I think our independent churches, we have this issue of spraying doom and all of these things. I think when we form this, there will be some kind of accountability. Number 5, to create interfaith platforms that promote the values of peace and harmony in accordance with the spirit of Ubuntu. Number 6, to promote public awareness to social cohesion. And I just underline this, the spirit of tolerance in the faith sector. The spirit of tolerance to accept other faiths and respect other faiths and to love all religions, all faiths, and all culture. That will build a strong South Africa. Number 7, to work with both public and private sectors through the implementation of projects that will uplift and build our communities spiritually, morally, and economically. Number 8, steering committees must be established in every municipality in the Republic of South Africa. Number 9, a religious desk must be formed to work on the ground addressing social cohesion, gender-based violence, criminal activities, raped victims, counseling in schools, alcoholism in schools, and murder. This will help to establish the moral fiber of society and give oversight. The next point, to assist religious bodies, the South African Religious Forum will assist religious bodies to be compliant with the Companies and Intelligence Properties Commission, CIPC. That's what we believe, that every church must be registered with our CIPC. No church, no organization cannot be, especially when the CIPC comes and come knocking at your church or knocking at your door and you don't be registered. Number 2, the Department of Social Development as a non-profit organization. You must register with the Department of Social Development as a non-profit organization. Religious Practitioner Certificate, our Honorable asked us, we must be SAQWA registered by the Education Department to be associated under an umbrella body for accountability reasons. We cannot be an independent organization or a platform that will occupy if you not accountable. Number 11, to work with the South African police and to report religions that are non-cooperative and whose practices that are harmful to community. They must be criminalized. No persons are above the law. We must be law-abiding citizens. For example, Madam Chairperson, when a driver is driving a car and if he enters a no-entry sign, who is violating the law? Is it the car or is it the driver? Yes, sir. The driver is violating the law. That if a pastor runs a church And if the church is called eye calling or faith ministries, when the pastor is doing wrong, the pastor must be criminalized and not the organization. Therefore, when we speak about a code of conduct, the code of conduct will be applicable to the pastors, not to the organization. The reason for that, you cannot regulate an organization. We can regulate the pastors. Now, I had a meeting with the commissioner of police, and we engaged him to come on board so that whichever pastor or religious practitioner is practicing these things like praying doom and raising the dead, like many of the speakers are very much concerned, we will bring some kind of awareness to them that there is a code of conduct and there is some kind of accountability. And we will tell them that the law will take its place. Because, Madam Speaker, if we don't address this as a religious sector, we will lose our children tomorrow. I just want to ask the Madam Chair if Dr. Msomi can take the platform because he raised a concern. Thank you.
Thank you, President. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we'll follow and try and answer some of the questions. I'm Bishop Msomi from KZN under South African Religious Forum. I'm heading a portfolio for economy. Proudly so. And I'm proud of who I am. No one will take it away from me. And I am an African. You'll never find a Sangoma in Europe, because in Europe they deal with their own culture. Madam Chair, the issue, it's bigger than us. I think this platform, we have to thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing us to come in all the way from our provinces to come and contribute in building this country. I'm worried of one thing. You know, as a father, no one will come in my house and tell me what to do. South Africa is my house. That is the question. As pastors, that we need to ask ourselves, is it our house or Zimbabwe is South Africa? We need to face a reality and don't try and push your religious sector as a scapegoat. Your religious sector, it's a vanguard of soul. Where there is soul, the religious will be there. And uNkulunkulu mhlazane sidala as Africans wasidala ngendlela yethu. Now, coming to SAFRU, as a head of economy, I think I will try and cover the question mainly on the issue of the economy. You know, our analysis says we as a religious sector, we are not within the nuclear of making decisions, in trying to make decisions that will be biased to the religious sector. Now, that is the problem that we are facing. you'll find all these things that are happening because we don't own any economy as Africans. You go to Jews, they own economy. You go to Muslims, they own economy. And what about us in our own country? We don't own economy. That is the challenge that we are facing. That's why we have all these things. Therefore, SARS will come with the solution that says, you build a church, you build a skill center within the church. You build a church, you build an indoor spot within the church. You can't have a church that will address the church. You need to have a church that will address the needs of the society. Mm-hmm. Now, we can no longer be in a position as South Africans where we will try to cater the investors on the expense of the poor people. Perfect. Now, Madam Chair, angazi ngibe kanjani ngesingisi, but I will appeal to pastors to assist others. UJesu mayethandazela umuntu, lithi iBhayibheli uJesu wathandazela abantu then abanika ukudla. Azange athathe kubona, wayebanika ukudla. UNkulunkulu lo esimkhulekayo wobaba mkhulu, mhlawumbe asil-understandi naleli gama elithi uNkulunkulu lichaza ukuthini. It's a colonized name. Mada befika bathi ukhonza ba, wathi umuntu ngikhonza lo mkhulu, lo mkhulu. Therefore it was taken to be uNkulunkulu. Now, uNkulunkulu maye instructa uMose to release abantwana bakhe kwa-Israel. Wayebayisaph eKhenani ezweni lesithembiso neyinyosi. Give them land and economy. Why pastors were running away to face the fact? Why? You mean your congregation, it is okay when they're losing jobs day in and out? Is it okay when your congregation, they've closed doors to contest within the economy of this country? Today, I'm going to go to Nando's because it's closed down. You can't. Now, as far as what we are saying, let's go back to basics and deal with the township economy. That's the first part. Because that's where money is. The money is not at the bank. The money is with the people. The second part will be the township industry. The third part will be the skills development. You can't have skills development that will in favor among investors, but you need to have a skills development that will address that particular township, because you are speaking to the township of that particular township. That is the issue, Madam Chair, that you are facing. We are running away of facing the reality as a religious sect. Today, sizo baby sitters ngalikhuluma iqiniso, bafika abantu, bafike kwama raping ganyama, bese ngiza kuwe ngithi no, it's okay because I'm a pastor. Uraping ganyama. Bithi uraping ganyama kamzobe, bithi uraping ganyama kamkhize or wherever, urape ingane yami as a pastor. Coming to the issue of our students at KZN, thank you, ma'am, for raising that matter. I'm one bishop who've been mandated by the president and my chairperson to go and engage in UKZN. The situation is bad. The issue that we are facing, all those kids who never paid money. You have girls who are doing fifth year in medicine that own the school with 200,000, and the school says you must pay 50% match. Whose do you have 100,000 that you can pay? Do you? Now, what is the role of NSFAS? And I concur with Uma if you're raising this matter. And the students are taken to jail day in and out. Yesterday, a lawyer, SNKP, Umkhize, he was in Pinetown trying to release the students of Westfield. You have a student from Ungoye, where the university sent a letter to Supreme Court, charging the kid. As we'll be going back, we'll be attending that matter. Now, you have a situation in these universities where you have NSFAS paying, but end of the day, you find that there is a problem with NSFAS or with ABOVC. You know, we are facing a crisis, and it's not going to only to be in KZN, but it's coming. Faith is coming. We've seen it in Forte. It's coming to other areas. Can we come up as a religious sector and try and sit down with the MEC of Education and address this matter once and for all? Because why you have NSFAS that doesn't pay these kids? As they said, Madam Chair, isilo sikhulumile. Said, akho umuntu ozofundisa ingane yakhe isex esikoleni. And it was our responsibility as a religious sector to carry with that mandate since we are coming from KZN. Last issue, Madam Chair, the last one. I think it will try and open up the mindset of all of us as a religious sector about the case of Ubushiri. At some stage, Ubushiri was somewhere like Gauteng, you know, FNB stadium, and each and everyone was getting Waeza Ezokoka U10 rand. To enter, you pay 10 rand. And the stadium was fully paid. Even in the grass, there were people. That is over 95,000 that was in the stadium. Now, when you calculate that money, end of the day in the morning, Madam Chair, Ubushiri went away with close to 50 million in South Africa. And one way or another, we need to honor and clap our hands for government goods and trying to assist in all conditions that we are facing. We know that for a fact we have 20 million South Africans unemployed, isn't it, Bishop? You have 20 million under social grant. What are your calculations? What is that we are preaching? Serve for God solutions. We will change the economy. We will start at our township first and deal with the matter. Because you have a tax shop from foreigners. We are keeping quiet about the malls. We're keeping quiet. How much money you're spending in the mall? The list is endless, Madam Chair. But for now, I think we have covered some of the questions. That it's not that there's nothing, but we have something in place, and we want to make sure, as SAFRU, we've opened up our departments. As earlier, Chairperson said, education, economy, arts and culture, senior citizens. We will be engaging with each and every minister. Where there is a minister, you will find us. We'll be coming in with our programs and proposals in saying this is a direction that we need to take. Be it imnandi or iyababa, it's up to you, Nina, as politicians, but it's in a smiling up. I thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Thank you. Let's reserve the others for those that are still going to come to respond to certain issues that the MPs have raised. But I think that's for the three organizations that specifically dealt with the question. Though the Archbishop then went off the tangent, but it's okay, it can be that. The South African Center of Religious Rights and Freedoms here? Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Professor Rasi Malerbe. I just want to ensure the meeting that I earned my title. I didn't buy it. I'm a real professor. Thank you for this opportunity, Chair. This is actually a wonderful occasion that the religions of South Africa have the opportunity to address a committee of parliament. It reminds me of, what was it, October 2017, when we also met here with this committee and spoke about the CRL Commission's report. And I remember the consensus that developed there. And here we are, two and a half years later, and we're still debating the same thing. I hope that this committee can, with all respect, can make some progress around this issue. I speak on behalf of Professor Peter Kurtzen. He is the chairperson of the Council for Religious Rights and Freedoms. Unfortunately, he cannot be here because of health reasons. So I stand in for him. Chair, the right to freedom of religion and belief protected in Section 15 of the Constitution is foundational to an open and democratic society in which people may safely pursue their convictions and practice their religion within the legal framework provided by the state. The various elements of religious freedom are explained more fully in the South African Charter for Religious Rights and Freedoms. This is a document that has been initiated and developed since 2008, and it was endorsed and supported at a ceremony in 2010 where most religious groupings, communities and leaders in South Africa actually signed that document. The charter is still being promoted, and over 150 religious and other bodies, including all major religions in South Africa, representing over 22 million South Africans, have so far endorsed the charter as an authoritative explanation of the right to religious freedom. The charter has been translated into 6 official languages. We would love for it to be in all 11. Can I just say the charter has been drafted as a neutral document in the sense that all religions can submit to it. It is based on the constitution of the country. It simply elaborates what the right to religious freedom means. All these institutions that signed the charter and are endorsing the charter, they established a council for the protection and promotion of religious rights and freedoms. And this council, of which I am a member, is sort of the designated keeper and protector of the charter. And the council believes that the deplorable abuses that's been exposed in certain religious communities should in the first place not be combated by way of the regulation of religion by the state, many have referred to that already, and I'm not going to elaborate this, simply to say that we believe that there's ample and sufficient legislative measures on the statute book to act against illegal and other unlawful actions in any sphere of society, not only the religious sphere. But what we do strongly believe, Chair, is that the religious communities of South Africa should act decisively themselves to eradicate malpractices and abuse and bring their own house in order. And this has also been voiced very eloquently today here. So in reply, I think, to the need expressed by the committee that the religious sector should come up with alternative proposals, my council has been advocating for a code of conduct as a first step right from the beginning. We already mentioned that to the committee 2.5 years ago. A code of conduct for religious communities and practitioners in which we commit ourselves to the eradication of abuses and the promotion of responsible and commendable conduct in the religion. So as a service to religions, all the religious communities of all persuasions in South Africa, the council went ahead and with the cooperation and support of many others, we developed a code of conduct for religions in South Africa. And in this code, the duties and responsibilities of religious bodies and religious practitioners are set out in the same way as we have set out our rights in the South African Charter of Religious Rights and Freedoms. Actually, the widely supported charter is the starting point and guideline for the code of conduct. Because as we see it, in the charter you have the rights, and in the draft code of conduct you have the corresponding duties or responsibilities. It's, as it were, the flip side of what you find when you look at your rights. So of course the code contains much more than that. It also contains certain aspects around sound financial practices and things like that. Different drafts of the code have been circulated widely over the last 2 years and have been adapted continuously to give effect to the comments we received. We can confirm today that we have received support for the code from many religious communities and that support from many more are being pledged regularly. But, Chair, and this is the point I want to make today very strongly, we believe that the code of conduct is not an end in itself. We believe that a code of conduct to which religious communities commit themselves sincerely should be just the first step in the self-regulation of religion and should be supported by appropriate educational initiatives. And others have mentioned this as well. A code of conduct, in other words, is only the beginning of a comprehensive educational process in which material and programs are developed for teaching religious communities and practitioners the principles of good citizenship, respect for human rights, principles of good governance, proper administrative procedures, sound financial practices, and much, much more. So what we see is that the code of conduct can be the rallying point. I acknowledge here immediately, Chair, that many churches, many religious organizations in South Africa have developed this kind of thing, have developed material, have developed their own codes of conduct and regulations and other orders within their own institutions. And we acknowledge that. But what we think the time has arrived is for a code of conduct like we propose to become the rallying point, to say, let's pool our resources, let's take hands across denominational, across religion, religious boundaries, and work together
because there is indeed, as people said, there is indeed a problem. There is indeed something that needs to be done. And we believe that the religious communities in South Africa should take hands and stand up and combat what is going wrong effectively. So we believe that religious communities, educational institutions, bodies such as the CRL Commission, all of those could be instrumental in the development and promotion of these material and programs. In our view, effectively combating abuses and malpractices in religious communities is more a matter of awareness, training, and commitment to proper values among religious communities and religious practitioners than a matter of state regulation and law enforcement. Of course, as we state in our submission, where religious practitioners or communities persist in breaking the law, effective law enforcement must take its course. So, Chair, in a spirit of cooperation, we respectfully submit the draft code of conduct to this forum. We have developed the code with the cooperation of many others, and we don't own the code. Rather, it is for religious communities and other interested institutions to take ownership of the code when they commit themselves to the values it contains. So it feels to me this is the opportunity to mobilize the consensus that I sense is already existing. Let's mobilize that consensus. Let's take hands and work together. We have identified a lot of issues, a lot of problems, and I believe that religious communities in South Africa have something to say about that and something to do about that. But then we have to cooperate. Then we have to work together. I urge this meeting, Chair, to acknowledge this code of conduct. It is not, as some argued here, of course we can't be completely uniform about this. But if we acknowledge the principle of it and the main values and principles contained in it, because it's all about acknowledging the Constitution, acknowledging human rights, accepting the duties and responsibilities that we have to acknowledge and respect the rights of others. It's all about good governance. It's all about sound financial practices. Nobody can argue with that. So if a body like the SACC, if a body like this committee, with respect, can say, this is a good idea, I think we can go for this, and that churches and religious communities can take this as an example, as a draft, as something that they can take ownership of and something that they can adjust to their own needs and circumstances. There's no law that says, hey, you must adopt this as is. We now, I tell you, we say we don't have ownership of this. We make it available. And I will make sure that everybody here who gives us our your email addresses will receive this. And you take it and you run with it. And you adjust it according to your needs and circumstances. That is the whole idea of this draft that we propose. The point is that churches, the religious communities must start somewhere in regulating themselves. Some have gone a long way in doing that. But there are still a lot that we can encourage and say, come on guys, come, let's go forward with this. So that's the spirit in which we submit this to this meeting and to this committee. We hope that you will have a look at it and find it useful. We also declare ourselves from the council side, we declare ourselves willing to make our knowledge and experience available, and to participate in any process that any institution wants to conduct, to promote the idea of a code of conduct, to promote this idea of self-regulation of religion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for that presentation as well as the round of applause.
understanding that we might be navigating towards getting now we have the next to the nation from the International Institute for Religious Studies. Are you ready?
Correct.
Yeah.
May I ask for assistance that the PowerPoint presentation can be shown, which I have submitted? But in the meantime, Honourable Chairperson, allow me to introduce myself, and apologies for the Honourable members who have to turn their heads, but I was made to sit here. My name is Christoph Sauer. So for my name, you might see that I was born in Germany, but I've lived in South Africa as a permanent resident for the last 20 years, and I've earned my doctorate at UNISA. And I'm professor of religious studies, and I'm affiliated to two universities here in South Africa and to another two in Europe, where I focus on religious freedom specifically. I'm also a founding director of the International Institute for Religious Freedom, which is a global network of scholars researching the issue of religious freedom, and one of our bases is in Cape Town, South Africa, and it's from here where we publish our International Journal for Religious Freedom. Thank you for the privilege of speaking here, as well as addressing the previous COCTA committee. And while you have given us a multitude of questions in a very short period of time, let me focus on those on which I might be more competent. So let me focus on the issues that emanate from the CRL report. And now I would really be happy if my PowerPoint could come up. But let me start with a few points of clarification. The first one is about problems identified. The second one is about terminology. And the third one is about narratives and presumptions, because there are so many things doing the round. So concerning the problems identified in the CRL Rights Commission report, I recommend that we clearly distinguish different types of problems. And here I must pay my respect to Advocate Daniela Ellerbeck of FOSA, who is here in the chambers. She's done a brilliant analysis of classifying them in four different categories. Number one, criminal or illegal acts. Number two, fantastical claims or promises. And number three, strange things that are neither harmful nor unlawful. And number four, lack of good governance. And we must distinguish those. Then, another point of clarification, the terminology. I've been watching this process for a whole number of years, and my observation is there's quite some confusion when it comes to terminology. There's also competition on authority to name things. There are different meanings assigned to the same words, particularly the word self-regulation, and there's a lot of non-inclusive language around. So the recommendation is to use clearly defined terminology, inclusive language, and unemotional and factual terminology. I understand you invited representatives of Christian churches today, but as parliamentarians, you must speak for the whole country. So I recommend that you're very careful to specifically say what you mean. For example, that you say churches and not the church, or that you talk about religious organizations and communities instead of churches or the religious sector, etc., etc. And then there are all sorts of narratives contained in media reports and other reports and presuppositions. I recommend that you really critically assess them, and that also that you avoid triggering fears. This whole narrative, the church has failed. Well, who says so? Or that peer review is to solve all problems, or new laws as the solution, or why must we play out human dignity against freedom of religion or belief? These are narratives I personally would very much question, and you find others in my submission. And I've written long, so I can be brief here. It's really a shame that we don't have the PowerPoint. Harmful religious practices is the one major issue that I want to address. And if you take the category of criminal or illegal acts that are already criminal or otherwise illegal in terms of existing law, and you ask, well, what kind of harm do they cause? You will find there's harm to life when people make you stop taking your medicines. There's harm to liberty when there's human trafficking involved. There's harm to health in sexual assault, rape, etc. There's psychological harm, again in the same. There's harm to personal development if children are kept from school without homeschooling. There's harm to public peace if people collectively go on rampage. There's harm to animals if live animals are eaten. There's economic harm to society in money laundering or income tax evasion. But it's actually in this section of those four where most of the harm is found, where it's in fantastical claims or promises that are amounting to advertisement, very little is found. Maybe some psychological harm in false and misleading deceptive representations, maybe economic harm in fraud, false promises in exchange of money, maybe harm to public peace by fake resurrections. And the third category, strange things that are neither harmful nor unlawful, beliefs, as we have heard, that are bizarre, illogical, or irrational, such as eating grass or flowers, are not necessarily harmful. But there is a blurry line. There's an overlap with practices that are unlawful and potentially dangerous and or harmful, and then they move into the other category. With these strange things, there's maybe only one exception, the harm to public peace. If extremely indecent behavior that sparks the public's moral outrage, such as going to rampage. And the fourth category, the lack of good governance, cannot be equated with harmful religious practices. There's one exception, the economic harm that might be caused by financial exploitation and mismanagement of collective funds. So if you look at the four, and I try to make quadrants, the problematic issues, they are already criminal. You don't need the category of harmful religious practices to pursue them. And it's the other two areas where there's maybe something or there's little, and another area where there's hardly anything. So I just try to address the issues that are on hand and look at them through the lens of the terminology that you have given. As you were asking for international experience, you remember the South African Constitution was very much advised by Canadians. So let us look at Canada. An author, Laurie Beeman, has written about defining harm, religious freedom and the limits of the law in 2008. And she's asking very pertinent questions. Where should we set the boundaries of religious freedom? But on what basis? And who should actually decide? And she then warns, and she's taking up the case of a minority group in Canada. It was the Jehovah's Witnesses, and there was a whole case against people refusing blood transfusions, etc., and being forced against their conviction to do it in a cancer treatment. But the lessons to draw from that, she says, be aware of power relations. It's the majority groups that have the power. They are in danger of marginalizing the minority groups. be aware, distinguish actual harm from the risk of harm. And then there's often panic, as we hear now with the coronavirus, but please avoid a risk and fear-driven perspective when it comes to the question of dealing with abuse. Don't make the mainstream normative and don't demonize minority groups. There's much more in that very good book, but that's just some of the very short lessons. And when you look around, there are other interesting things about harmful religious practices, and I think we all agree, for example, human sacrifice is banned. Female genital mutilation must be banned. But then there are other things that are age-old religious practices that only inflict self-harm, like odd things like self-flagellation. Yes, you should warn against them, you should advise against them, but there's no need to ban them. So I just wanted to show that it is quite a complex matter when you talk about harmful religious practices. If I've still got time, I would like to say a few sentences about codes of conduct. 4 points why I think they're feasible and practical. Codes of conduct for religious communities must be voluntary and emanate from the respective communities due to the nature of freedom of religion or belief. Freedom is the key word. Such a code cannot be imposed by the state or any of its organs. And the development of such a code by an organ of the state can already be regarded as an imposition or an overreach of the state. However, its adoption may be recommended and encouraged by government and its arms. But such codes of conduct must always remain voluntary, and they must never, never be enforced by law. That would be an abuse. They must remain voluntary, and the state must not instrumentalize them as a point of law. Now, you might be aware that there are competing codes in the room. There's the one we've just heard about, the Code of Conduct for Religions in South Africa, and it had an extensive consultation process, a mandated consensus with broader support, and it's complementary to the charter we've heard. My assessment is this code is actually best fit for purpose. It uses very comprehensive terminology and it's very comprehensive of the issues. So I'm in full support of this code of conduct. There's also what was initially called the Code of Best Practice for Religious Organizations and later was split in two parts as a Code of Best Practice and then Principles of Good Governance that were developed within the CRL Rights Commission based on the King's Report on Corporate Governance. And it was tabled at the Religious Summit, but it was not adopted. In my modest assessment, I would think that the principles of good governance in there provide very good philosophical foundations for a possible training manual. And that would be very much within the mandate of the CRL in training and empowering religious communities. Again, you've asked for international experience, and I've searched far and wide, and I'll give you briefly three examples. There was a major study in 2010 about codes of conduct for religious persuasion, the legal framework, and best practices. And that was done on a subtopic in the realm of freedom of religion or belief, namely inviting others to consider your claims, but that's where conflicts most often arise, as we've already heard today. So they came to some very good recommendations about development of codes of conduct that can also apply to our case here. Another one, 2011, there was a major historic document issued by Vatican, World Council of Churches, and World Evangelical Alliance called Christian Witness in a Multi-Religious World. So here you have a Christian code of conduct for Christian inviting others to consider their claims. And that has led to a much wider degree of cooperation in these matters than ever in the past. That's why I call it a historic document. And that's an example how such codes can really bring momentum to cooperation across past boundaries. And another one that was just handed to me after the deadline, so it's not even mentioned in my written submission, in August 2019 in Switzerland, a proposed charter of religious communities was published with the subtitle Guidelines for a Peaceful Living Together of Religious Communities in Switzerland. And of course, in Switzerland, they have completely different challenges in South Africa, but again, they're using the instrument of a charter to work for a peaceful living together. So three examples where charters, or studying the issue of charters, has had a very good and helpful input. If I may very briefly touch on other questions, the role of religious bodies. 5 points. They're mainly responsible for themselves, as we've heard. They can only discipline those in their own ranks, but they can foster local and mutual accountability, and they can provide contact points for community complaints, and they must report criminal acts to respective state organs. And then the role of the state, and you distinguish the state in general, then parliament, and then the CRL Rights Commission. So the state in general, I think in tackling this whole issue, the principle of doing no harm must be maintained. Do no harm when trying to engage the state problems. And the second one has been voiced many times, uphold the rule of law, enforce laws. And with regards to freedom of religion or belief, respect it because it's there, not through citizenship, but as a birthright of every human being. And in a secondary rank, then it's the task of the state to protect it and also to promote this freedom for all. The state must have a role of positive neutrality and objectivity. There must not be any list of predefined or particularly accepted religious groups, because that state preference for certain religious groups will always lead to bias and to discrimination. And there should be no mandatory reporting of religious organizations in general to state. Of course, if you're registered as an NPO, you are mandated to report generally. That is not touched here, but you can't make it mandatory for everybody to report to the state, just like that. Quickly to Parliament, if I may. Where are we? Only make new laws and regulations after assessing the function and enforcement of existing laws and regulations. And it's also Parliament's task to watch over the CRL Rights Commission that it can properly fulfill its mandate. And on the task of the CRL Rights Commission, I mainly see it as training and empowering religious organizations and their leaders, or taking complaints, checking them, and then referring them to the respective organs of state. And as you are honorable members of Parliament, and you know CRL is based on the CRL Act, which was pronounced by Parliament, remember this act emerged in a context of protection of minorities, and that's why three groups are bundled in that act. Cultural groups, religious groups, linguistic groups. But that shows you the whole background is a background of minority rights, not a background of fundamental human rights that cannot be derogated. So I'm questioning whether the CRL Rights Commission is actually a suitable instrument to defend freedom of religion or belief for all due to its limited mandate. That's something you might want to examine. I think I'll skip the topic of regulation of religious practitioners. And let me just point that there are five alternative solutions as an appendix to my paper, but I don't want to strain the time. Others will present the same matter at a later time. Thank you very much for your patience.
then the former commissioner is put at the end, outside the venue. They don't show you what she said inside the venue to corroborate, however, and certain things that we have really deliberated on with the CRL Commission, including the language that is being used, which is, you know, in our view as COCC, so contradictory to their mandate, which is to promote and protect. But every time there's media, you'll hear interesting things from, you know, commissioners, and we are wondering what's happening, what's the business with all this, and it's so much of a challenge. Now back to the issue of uni standards, and then my comment to what the deputy chairperson of CRL asked on that day in November, that, you know, religion is not like science, and you cannot say because doctors are doing this and that and have like your kind of regulatory body like your SAMAS and so on, and want to take that as like an example which, you know, the religious sector must deal with. And, you know, my suspicions and my concerns were actualized just here. I wrote about them, but they just happened here. You know, things like your standard. You know, what is that standard, for an example, that defines a religious hub? Now, we are told, like now, that this session is specifically for Christians. But now, have you seen the experience of that we just had? You know, when one speaker, you know, spoke to what the other believes, and there was a reaction to that. So that must say something to us, that we have a problem and a challenge of standardization. Because, like what I said, especially learning from one of, you know, the people in the African traditional religion at Rema Summit. Now, the leader there said something interesting, that, you know, we must decolonize, you know, this thing of education where religion is concerned. Because mina ngumuntu womoya, then how do you regulate umoya? Ngoba umoya mawuvunguza, I'm following. And in my understanding in the field of training, how will you put a unit standard, you know, to test competence if you were to develop a degree, let's say in African beliefs or African traditional religion or the practice of sangomas? You know, how will you say, okay, tick the boxes and say, no, this and that and that and that, that you are competent, a competent sangoma? Because you are dealing with, you know, spirit. Now, how do you subject spirit to qualification? And now it's a problem, because the other thing that's a problem is, this is not about church. We are dealing with different issues. You know, I brought two books with me, and the first one is the Bible of this country. So if we are in this house, the boss is the Bible of this country. And which is something that previously it was interesting to hear the chairperson, Professor Musoma, on Skipama files alluding to. You know, when he was asked to intervene on this other church which was keeping children from school. And the leader said, no, but my Bible says, and the prof said, no, the Constitution is above your Bible. So if we come here and ask pastors about, hey, Bafundisi, why are you not praying? Why this and this? I mean, that is irrelevant, because the Bible is not the book of this house. It's not the book of this country. It's the book of the people who subscribe to its teachings and the faith. So if we are to use the Bible
to maybe bring correction to pastoral practices and so on and so on. Let the pastors deal with their book, solve their issues. And if we are to deal with things within this context, let's look at, you know, the standard book. Because as far as regulation in terms of pastors, we do have a standard of regulation, which is the scriptures. That's why to deal with us as pastors, because we subscribe to the same thing, we just show each other verses on, say, like to say, hey, Joe, you know, this part is like, but in this verse, it says you must do 1, 2, 3. You must pray. Or the manner in which you pray or practice this faith is not in accordance to this practice of the faith. We have the regulatory standard. But now when we move and come to this space, now dynamics become different, and which is something we need to look into, because the context here is no longer about church. That's why, you know, outside there I was worried. I was talking to Mr. Mafaza and I was worried because I came late, and then he shared a little bit on what has happened, and even what the chair said, that no, for today's session for Christians, you know, I have a problem. I said to him, I have a problem with that.
Then he should have been earlier to understand the whole context of what
yes.
you said.
Yes, I do understand, Chair.
I didn't want to call you to order earlier because you're dealing much on it and blowing out of context as well.
Yes, I
can
do understand.
Focus on the issues at the end and put it as a bad issue. If you want clarity, we'll clarify that to you.
Yes.
And it was placed. Yeah, the first person was raising it now, this late hour.
Yeah, no, he did explain and it's understood. But I'm saying in a bigger scope of things, because of we are dealing, because the colloquium or the invite speaks to religion, and religion means everybody here. And you know, one member of said something, said that now you speak of a person who's not here. So if issues are to be dealt with, let parties' consent be there so that those corners, I mean, I'm imagining what has happened with the two speakers who contradicted each other. You know, that the two bishops, one is speaking to something to do with African traditional religion, and the other said, no, but I don't feel good about this. So things like that, at least, because they are within the same space, it helps a lot that now if there are point of corrections and all those things, they can happen. And so I'm saying, why am I saying what I'm saying? What I'm saying is we have a problem with standardization, as in we are a country of diverse beliefs. Now, if we are to regulate or put a certain standard, how are we going to measure that? Because sometimes what is a plus on the other side, on the other party, to the other is, you know, a negative. So which is something that we feel it needs to be looked at. And now on the issues that have been raised by the report, one of those things we have realized is the failure of organs of state, you know, to discharge their mandates, you know, in terms of enforcement of the law in those corners. Like, for an example, this other time, I managed to attend a session, a workshop at SARS, conducted by a division at SARS there of education. And one of those things the presenter was dealing with was to explain what the mandate of SARS is. And she said it's threefold, which is education, and collection and enforcement. And she said another thing interesting, that there cannot be enforcement without education. Then I underlined that. The other interesting statement that she said was like, okay, sometimes we do go to places of employment where we, you know, educate employees on how to file their taxes. And in my mind, I was like, okay, but have you done it
for the pastors or the religious sector, things like that. And I'm like, okay, fine. The mandate says threefold. And certain people then are given that privilege to be educated on how to file taxes and all those things. But religious leaders, pastors who are doing a particular work which is legitimate, are sidelined. And presently, now there is a bad thing that now we must gun for churches, we must gun for pastors, you know, from SARS. And I'm saying, why apply the law selectively? You know, you haven't done the education part, but you want to enforce. This is the same thing, you know, also with the CRL Act. There's an educational element there which has not been discharged. I mean, the first time we heard of CRL and what it's all about was the incidences that happened at Tshwane. By the way, I'm from Tshwane. And when they happened, you know, it was so interesting that on the day where the first comment happened, we were at Tshwane speakers, you know, offices, and then we were chaired by Professor Msuma, where, you know, the collective were commenting to that, that what is this? And from there, there was escalation. So there's a gap of standardization that we need to deal with. And there's an educational element. And we believe there's no need for extra laws, you know, because the current legislation...
Now, what is your script that you're reading on? Because
yes,
we allocated 15 minutes. You didn't say it with us. And we're finding it difficult now to concentrate.
Yeah, like I said, it's available.
You email it to us and you wrap up as well?
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
because you see, members are vulnerable because you are talking, nothing to refer in the concentration level. But if there was a document, you are raising genuine issues, but we thought you would summarize to make it short.
Yeah,
can you
okay.
move towards that? I'm giving you 2 minutes.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. Yeah, so basically, is the issue of definition that we need to deal with of harmful practices, and we need a standard to measure what's harmful, and you know, the standard bearer to deal with. And the other thing on issue of sanctioning individuals, you know, like I said, that for Christians who subscribe to the Bible, the regulator is the scriptures, and then where there are practices that are inconsistent with the teaching of scripture, then, you know, there's processes within the scriptures on how to deal with that. And then in terms of feasibility, there's a challenge there because we should subject ourselves to the scriptures. But basically what I wanted to raise, unfortunately technology failed us. We did submit, you know, folder to deal with this, but we'll deal with that. So basically, it's the issue of standardization that now if we say we regulate, what measure are we going to use? Because of we cannot use the Constitution, because the Constitution speaks to equality of art. So how are we going to balance the forces unless we subject ourselves here, which is something, yeah. And on qualifications, we are busy on that because of NQF speaks to the issue of, you know, that RPL and certain things. They, you know, it's not all qualifications that are accredited or not accredited, which is something I've been raising with SAQA and dealing with the Secretariat on that. Yeah.
Yes, we'll continue to engage.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me brief you during the team.
Okay.
What is the, how are we going to approach all these issues? The disadvantage of life coming. But you understand at times there are circumstances beyond your control. And the Pentecostal and charismatic churches. Are you here? No, are you still coming? I have you on the list, Bishop. Okay, or you can, you are part of the group.
Chair. Chair, just a FYI, Chair.
Speaking.
It's me, Chair.
I think there's someone at the door who's advising us that lunch is ready.
Honorable Zungula, I can send you there to check for me. If you do that, then you're going to go.
I'm actually worried because our fundis might faint and they'll blame you, Chair.
No, no. They won't faint. This was the prayer. They fast.